So I will perhaps just give a bit more background to the Arcana. 12 volumes, as I've said, and it's the exposition of the spiritual meaning of the books of Genesis and Exodus. And it is a very structured work. The book of Genesis largely, in terms of how Swedenborg deals with it, is focused on the Lord's glorification, which is framed in the context of what Jesus' inner life was about when he was in the world. So that's the frame that's given for the exploration of the book of Genesis. So we know with the book of Genesis that the first 11 chapters of that book are mythological, or dealing with a made-up history, but a made-up history that's true. And is much bigger than just anything to do with factual truth. So it's true because it talks about what is real, and only what is real is true, and what is real is love. So that's what it deals with, and it's the Lord's love for the human race that's being unfolded there, and how divine truth can meet anyone wherever they are and lift them into heaven. So what a precious book that is. We were moving out of the those first 11 chapters, we then move into the story of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and finishing up with the story of Joseph. And each of those are presented as stages of the Lord's own development. And on another level, they are stages of the development of the Word within the human mind. So on one hand, we have a description very much based in history, the Lord's history, and the glorification work or the sorting out of the spiritual world. That's really what's going on there. That was tied in with what he had to deal with. But on another level, it's true in the sense that it's about how the Lord, as the Word, sorts out the spiritual world of your mind. So everything in there is applicable to your own psycho-spiritual states or your journey, your spiritual journey. Everyone's spiritual journey is reflected in the Word because the Word is infinite. So it's greater than the sum of the human race. And so it caters for every eventuality, every state, every condition. It's all there. It's the map for everybody. And you move through the life of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and finishing with Joseph. And what we have there is this unfolding of states at different levels. So the Arcana is presented on many different levels. The two main levels, which is the Lord's glorification, and the other main level is our regeneration. So we have these sort of parallel levels going on all the time. And what happens in the Arcana is you have the switching that occurs between levels. And you just need to be sensitive to that switching. But be aware also that even where the switch occurs, so it might move from dealing with, something that Jesus was dealing with when he was in the world into an application of a particular piece of scripture to development of the human mind. while there is this switching in terms of the text, there is still, for that which is read on a lower application, there is still a higher application. And for that's being presented at a higher level, there is still a lower application as well. So while the text switches, it holds every level. Okay, a multiplicity of levels. So because of that, we find ourselves in there. We find ourselves in there. And we find where we're at. We find what it is we have to deal with in our life at any particular point in time, if we are open to hearing what it has to say to us. When you get to the book of Exodus, the story takes a very different tone, flavour. Let's give you a handout. And some of this, if you're at the last seminar, you will have seen this, but it's good to go over it again. Just pass one along, and there should be enough. Diagram of the book of Exodus that we've been building as we go through each seminar, which is why it stops at Exodus 26. So you'll have to come to more seminars to get the updated versions. The goal here was I just wanted to really just give a simpler map as possible as to what's happening where in the book of Exodus. And also what's helpful is when you just look along the line, if you like, the chapter line and the comments below, you can sort of get a feel for a progression that's going on as you become more familiar with what's in the Arcana, and that can be very helpful. But, you know, obviously, you know, there's a number of volumes here covered off in four pages, so it is only a very surface scratching of what the contents are. But it does help us to see how the Arcana is structured, and this is true in terms of the general structure. This is also true for the book of Genesis as well. So what you'll see at the along the top there is there's what's called the interchapter material. So what's in the Arcana is that leading into a chapter and finishing off a chapter, Swedenborg deals with various topics, and then you have the contents, which is the exposition of the scriptural material in between those two. So it's like a sandwich. You've got experiential material either side, and then you've got the expositional material woven in with experiential material throughout each chapter. So you'll see that along the top line. We're dealing in the main, I think right through the end, we're dealing in the book of Exodus with, as far as the interchapter material goes, the material that comes before each chapter has to do with charity or charity and faith. Okay, so, and then what we have at the end of each of those chapters is material to do with Earths in the universe, planets, other worlds, that sort of thing. Now, I'm convinced, although I can't show how, that in every case I can see some links, but the interchapter material is a vital part of understanding what's in the material in the middle. Often the interchapter material is kind of ignored, not so much the material on charity and faith, but certainly the material on other planets. How does that fit? Mm. How does that fit with what Swedenborg is discussing? And, you know, that's a question that's been involved or confronted people in the New Church, well, in my reading, forever. Just for as long as this material's been available, people have wondered how you handle this interchapter material that deals with Earths in the universe. Okay? But when you begin to look at that material, it is very spiritual in its content. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And what's happening there is that deep spiritual principles are being framed in a way that either catches your interest or closes things down for you. And in our discussions, in our work with the Arcana over the next few days, there are the idea of the cherubim. Cherubim built into the Lord's tabernacle on many different levels. They are there to guard the way. Now, often we think of, if you know the story of the Garden of Eden, they were placed to guard the way. And, I remember early on I used to think about that as blocking the way. But actually what they're doing is they're guarding the way to eternal life. Not to keep people out, but to make sure they can get in.
To preserve the way in.
That's right. It's clear in the literal sense of the Bible that that it serves that very same function. You're only allowed in to the degree that you're willing to put truth into practice. That's what opens it up. It's not a blocking to punish your way. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's a blocking for protection, the protection of our own souls. That's what's going on there. So you have this interchapter material. I'll be dealing with it a bit in the session I'm doing on the chapter that I've been given to do. Just trying to draw some links, and hopefully you'll be able to see that. See the connections. The literal, what you see there, you just have the literal sense running along underneath the chapter references. And you'll see that the story of Exodus basically is the story of the deliverance of the children of Israel. Joseph ended up in Egypt. He ruled Egypt, saved the world, if you like, during the famine. And then a ruler arose who didn't know Joseph and basically started to take the children of Israel and abuse them. And the story there really is about our own abuse of divine truth. That's really what it's about. The sons of Israel, the truths that exist in the human mind. And Pharaoh, if you like, is the ego or the proprium, making use of truths for its own ends. And so what you have there is this binding up of what is spiritual to serve the natural. And that's what the bondage and imprisonment aspect is all about. And there has to be a new vision of truth in order for the condition to be exposed and redemption to occur. And that new giving of truth is Moses. Okay, so Moses is a new insight, and predominantly the insight that the ego or the proprium shouldn't rule, that spiritual things need to rule over natural things. And so there is this unfolding of our story throughout. And if you just flip over to the next page, page 2 there. There is this confrontation of between Pharaoh and Moses and Aaron. Moses is described in the Arcana as the divine truth. Aaron is doctrine from that truth, the mouthpiece of Moses. So the word, if you like, Moses and doctrine drawn from the word come together and they begin to shed light on the situation. Okay, so they shed light on our situation within us. And then you have this series of plagues. Pharaoh hardens his heart. If you know the story, it says he'll release them and then he says he won't. And so you have this vacillation going on. Well, you know, when we think about our own experience, same vacillations occur in us. conflict of desires, natural desires versus spiritual desires, conflict of what we're beginning to see as the truth and how it contradicts the truth that we had held, and there's a possibility that the truth that we had held is actually false, and so there's this, all this pressure comes on within the mind as things start to get sorted out. Now, what begins to occur is that there are these, if you look down the bottom of page 2 there, there's a series of plagues that occur. What are these plagues? Well, we know that the Lord is love, and we know that the Lord doesn't put plagues on people. So how do we explain these plagues? Well, these plagues are really the opening up to a person's vision of what the proprium actually is. These plagues, as a condition within us, are pre-existing. They're always there. The proprium cannot be anything else other than what these plagues manifest it to be. Okay? It's just that we don't see it until truth begins to shine its light on it. And so there is this unfolding of a series of plagues. And this is coming to see what the natural is when it is in a dominant position. What the loves of self and the world are. That's what this is about. We'll just wait for the trumpets to...
you know, a little new truth.
I love the diamond. So, they end up being released in the end. The power of Pharaoh, his army is wiped out in the Red Sea, if you recall. Things are beginning to be seen for what they really are. And then they end up in Sinai, and what's beginning to happen there is there is again another, if you like, another vision of the truth, which is being presented to Moses for the people, and that brings us to the you know, the word being delivered, the Ten Commandments. The building, the instructions for the building of the tabernacle, all this sort of thing then comes into the vision. And that's where we're up to in the story. Anyone have any comment to make?
Can you just give one example of how the plagues illustrate spiritual life rebuilding an aspect of the ego?
That's a challenging question, Michael. The various things. So you start with the, if you like, the serpent, the rod becoming a serpent. Okay. So and what you have is the magicians. Okay, magicians are aspects of our lower nature. Being able to counterfeit what is true, so to present what is false as truth. So in terms of our own experience, these are the illusions I have to do with the illusions of the senses, or believing what appearances say as opposed to what the word teaches. Okay, so...
I'd offer as an example... you know, a real sort of grabbable example, the way in which early on we tend to select, choose, or relate to something that is revealed to us that pleases our own particular view of life at that time. Few of us like being warned or bluntly told that we are, you know, incomplete or misguided or whatever word you want to use. So our tendency early on, rather than later on, early on our tendency is to actually say, oh, yes, or that, but oh, no, not that. That's not what I'm into this. Not that, you see. And I think that's a universal thing that people tend to do early on when they meet a true idea, and that is pick and mix.
So it's an adulteration, really.
Yeah, yeah, so adulteration. An example is, say, the flies. They've described this level of falsities. Now, those falsities, there was a time when we believed them to be true. I have life in myself is the very base falsity from which all evil and falsity come from. But it's a belief we hold that our life is our own at some point. Now, that is malevolent flies, but when we are in that belief, it's not flies for us, it's a pleasure to believe that. But as truth begins to unfold it, we begin to see its true nature. And so there's this transformation into these, we begin to see it as falsities, or these malevolent flies, if you like. Sensual pleasures, you know, is another one. The lice, you know, the dust that becomes lice. That is another thing. The frogs, the piles of frogs, you know. Again, you know, when we are into the love of self and the love of the world, those frogs are something that we enjoy. But when we begin to see what they are, then they become a stinking mass that needs to be dealt with. So it's that sort of idea.
She's a beautiful illustration, isn't it? Some denial before that time.
Yeah. Yeah, and just that's right, an inability to even see. Mm.